You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to the Thrive podcast series hosted by Med Learning Group. My name is Dave Chapman, and I will be the host of today's podcast. In this episode, we will review the systemic therapies for patients with moderate to severe atopic dermatitis, discussing the efficacy, safety, and uses of these agents to optimize patient care. Joining me today is Dr. Jonathan Silverberg, Director of Clinical Research and Patch Testing at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences in Washington, D.C. Welcome, Dr. Silverberg.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Dr. Silverberg, when would you recommend that patients with atopic dermatitis be referred to you by their primary care provider?
This is a very important question, I think, in general. You know, for background, there's not enough dermatologists out there to see every atopic dermatitis patient. And so the primary care practitioner is currently and always will probably treat the lion's share of atopic dermatitis in the United States and will be playing a major, major role in the management of this disease from sort of broader public health perspective. So I think from the first line management perspective, get comfortable as a primary care provider with at least some of the basics around the use of topical steroids and some of the newer non-steroidal agents. And it's totally fair game to use them. Most of the topical therapies will work to at least to some extent in other chronic inflammatory skin diseases. So even if you're not 100% sure, like you think, well, I don't know if this is eczema. I don't know if it's psoriasis, you know, but the truth is the treatments will work well. So treat your patients. All right. Simple conservative topical approaches, they're usually easily accessible and covered by insurance. It's a reasonable way to go. If they do well, great. They might technically be carrying the wrong diagnosis for a while, but you know what? Whatever, right? If they're doing well, they're doing well. And if they have no other extended sequelae of the disease and it's in, because they're in their milder forms, no biggie. But if you start to see issues of just progressively more severe disease, not responding well to topical therapy, or sometimes patients will have short-term great response to topical steroids, right? In fact, I would argue most do. The limitation or the big gap with topical steroids is not how many folks fail after 2-3 weeks. It's more of, okay, well, after the 2-3 weeks are up, the party has to come to an end, you know, and they have to stop it at some point. And then they're flare right back up again. And now what do we do long-term and how do we manage that? And so when we start to run into those struggles in any of those scenarios, I would recommend referral to a specialist in this. Sometimes that will mean going to, more out of the box topical approaches. Sometimes the topicals are just, in fact, a lot of the time for the more severe cases, topicals are just not enough, no matter how good they are. And it means going to some of the newer oral, systemic, and biologic therapies that are out there. And you certainly shouldn't feel like you're going to be losing your patients either, because I speak for myself, and I think on behalf of most, if not all of my dermatology colleagues, we like the idea of being able to co-manage patients for some of our medications when it comes to thinking about like adverse event monitoring or laboratory monitoring and just things like that. It's always good to have another set of smart eyes watching over the patient to monitor them on any treatments.
Great. That's very helpful. Next question. In those patients with moderate to severe disease, do you have a time interval in mind, typically between flares when you're trying to manage those?
Yeah. So I think that this is a fascinating question. It has several nuances to it. Maybe not directly answering your question, but I think very relevant and important to know is, you know, what is a realistic time frame to set to expect a good response from a topical therapy in atopic dermatitis? And I would argue that already by 3 to 4 weeks, you're going to see 90% or more of the efficacy you're going to get out of a topical steroid, as long as the patient is adherent and using it, you know, the right way. So if they come back 4 weeks later and they're only like 40% better, don't fall into the trap of saying, oh, well, just keep going for another 12 weeks and it'll probably, no, maybe you'll get another 10%, but you're not getting them much more than where they're at that point in time. If you identify some gap with adherence or they're not putting it on well or whatever, that's a different story. And obviously you can fix that. But if after 4 weeks of appropriate use of topical therapy, they're either they didn't get better in the first place, or they get better initially, but the minute they stop, they start flaring up again, you're going to have to start thinking about what other approaches can be brought in. Now, the reason why I prefaced answering your actual question with that is because, so let's say a patient has 5-6 flares a year. So you put them on topical therapy to treat flare number one, and they get better, then they stop. And then 3 weeks later, they flare again, and you treat and they get better and they stop and they flare again. And they do this sort of dance over and over again. And at that point, yeah, you'll use the topicals still to treat a flare, but you really need to start thinking about how do we prevent flares? Sometimes flare prevention can be done with proactive application of topical medications. Often it requires really going, stepping up to a systemic or biologic or phototherapy because you've got to stabilize the disease because they just can't be using topical steroids, you know, 3 out of 4 weeks of every month. They're going to run into those adverse events. And on top of that, they're living a life of a roller coaster where they just don't have good control of their disease.
Great. Thank you. I'm curious, in your patients with severe atopic dermatitis, how do you determine which systemic therapy to use between immunosuppressants, monoclonal antibodies, or JAK inhibitors?
So we don't have enough time to answer this question in all its depth. I'll be honest, right? This is one of those, like, there are literally, you know, week-long symposia addressing the complexities of this because there's so much happening in the disease right now, which is amazing. But then it's also like, well, how do you keep up with that and figure out where, you know, who is the right patient for the right medication? There are several, at least high-level principles, though, without even mentioning the specific name of any medication, but just thinking about like oral versus biologic and how to potentially consider some of that. I would argue if the patient has, has tried to optimize topical therapy and has an inadequate response, that's a prerequisite, right? You look at the FDA approvals for any of these drugs, it's in those who've had an inadequate response to topical therapy. So give it a go, you know, try to optimize that topical therapy. If they don't get it, you want to refer to your to dermatology colleagues. Okay, what would come next and how do you decide sort of figure out what comes next? At that point, I think a big part of this has to be this shared decision-making conversation because there's something for everybody. Some patients, I mean, most patients don't like shots in general, but if you push them, they'll be able to do it for most, right? Not everyone, right? Some patients say, doc, I'd rather die than take a shot. And okay, so then you have your answer, right? You know, all right, I'm not using a biologic here. I'm going to have to go to an oral. And then the choice of which oral becomes a little bit more nuanced. For other patients, sometimes patients say, I can't swallow pills, you know? And so, so then you have your answer. They'll take a shot. For each of these medications, though, conceptually comes with different strengths. The strength, in a sense, in particular for the biologics, is because they tend to be more targeted. As a general rule, they'll come with cleaner safety profiles, which is conducive for continuous long-term use. That might be what some patients need, but I can tell you from experience, it's not often what patients want. You know, it's something that will help them achieve long-term control. That sounds great. But on the other hand, with biologics, there is no real exit strategy. It's hard. You kind of have to stay on them for ad infinitum as long as they continue to have their disease. Patients don't always like that. The oral agents as small molecules offer a lot more flexibility. They offer dose flexibility. They offer the ability to have drug holiday more in patients who have more intermittent disease. You know, getting back to your last question about, between flares, sometimes patients can have 2 months between a flare. Why be on a drug to treat something that they weren't going to flare up in that period anyway? So small molecules allow a lot more tailoring and flexibility, but they often have broader mechanisms of action that will come with safety trade-offs. And so it then becomes this risk-benefit discussion about what really is ideal for the patient. And the shared decision-making process really allows you to bring all of that together, assess patient preferences, and then align which drug profile matches best to the patient's preference.
Well, in this next question, I want to be a little bit more targeted. Looking at monoclonal therapy, are there specific side effects that you or your team typically educate patients on?
Yes. And it will vary to some extent for what those medications are. In the case of, you know, the new kid on the block, new class on the block for atopic derm would be the JAK inhibitors, the Janus kinase inhibitors. And this is, you know, as a class, they're a big part of the future of medicine. They're being used in so many different areas of medicine right now. So the conversation that I'm having with you right now is by no means unique to atopic derm and really needs to be had for so many other disorders. But we also have to recognize not all JAK inhibitors are created equal, and not all, you know, disease populations are at baseline are created equal in terms of their risk. In atopic dermatitis, the actual observed safety data for in the United States, the two approved JAK inhibitors, which are abrocitinib and upadacitinib, are markedly cleaner than what you would have gathered from the how nasty the labels look with the black box warnings, or from even some of the observed safety data in older, sicker rheumatoid arthritis patients. So once we've got that kind of class-wide boxed warnings, you really need to talk to patients about all of those, because if you ignore them and poo-poo them, they're going to go home, they're going to read the package insert, and they're going to say, either you have no idea what you're talking about, or you're lying to them, right? So you have to kind of get ahead of it and provide the appropriate, neither over nor under estimation of, you know, what that safety actually looks like. And so I talked to them about there might be rare possibility of developing blood clots or even, you know, cardiovascular issues. But I also try to contextualize to say the actual observed event rates in the trials were lower than what we've actually seen as just the baseline risk for developing a heart attack or a stroke in an average atopic dermatitis patient. And so when you frame it that way, it makes it clear that, yeah, okay, I can't say for sure it couldn't happen. But on the other hand, there's no glaring signals there. And it's actually quite reassuring in terms of the observed data in atopic derm. And so that would be one, you know, those would be the ones I would think about for the JAK inhibitors. When it comes to the biologics, for the ones we've got right now, would be dupilumab and tralokinumab. We'll have other ones coming soon. They're similar enough in their mechanism that it's the same discussion from an adverse event profile. And that is conjunctivitis, these eye issues as a side effect. They tend to not be dangerous, but boy, can they be annoying. And so just letting patients know about it, thinking about potential treatment strategies around that. And then sometimes patients will get rarely different skin side effects. Honestly, I typically don't bring those up with patients because they tend to be so rare that I don't need to. But the eye issues are what I do bring up. And I let them know, you know, if it happens, don't try to be a hero and wait it out for the next 3 months till you get in to see me. Because if you let it get bad, it's going to be harder to control. Let me know as soon as you think this is happening, because the earlier we intervene, the easier it is to manage and the better control we're going to get.
Well, thank you, Dr. Silverberg. And we appreciate your time. We've come to the end of our podcast, and I also want to thank our listeners for joining us and hope that you will listen to other episodes of the Thrive Atopic Dermatitis podcast series. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians, nurses, and other healthcare practitioners. I would like to also give a special thank you to our grant supporters, Sanofi and Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, who provided an unrestricted educational grant for this activity.